You're listening to KC Forum with Kathy Quinn, public affairs with an entertaining spin.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome. KC Forum is the name of the radio show right here on this radio station every single Sunday. If there's something you want to hear, if you want to find out about some more information on a topic, a subject, just drop me a line, Kathy.Quinn@fox4kc.com. Human trafficking, it is a problem. And, you know, Kansas City is one of the top five cities where human trafficking is prevalent. I didn't even realize that. We've got the folks from Restoration House. They're going to talk to us about it and tell us how we can try to put a stop to it. We will hear about childproofing your home to make sure your house is safe for your toddlers. And in light of the forecast where we're supposed to be getting snow, we wanted to talk to Chuck Casey from KCPNL. First up, though, we have Jeff Arbuckle, and he is the president of Restoration House. And now we're going to talk about this very serious subject with him. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
You know, it was very lovely to hear all about the organization at the recent Mayor's Prayer Breakfast, and you were all awarded a check by that committee. And it was just, it's just really wonderful the work you do. I think a lot of people don't realize that there is something like Restoration House available.
Yeah, Restoration House has been in existence for about 4 years. We're the region's only long-term care facility for adult women and minor girls that have been rescued or liberated from human trafficking. And we simply have programs and services for these adult women and minor girls to heal and be restored.
All right. So my second question is, people don't realize that there is an issue to human trafficking here in the Midwest. It's like, no, that couldn't happen here. It happens somewhere else.
That's correct. It's really of epidemic proportions. Human trafficking actually is larger than the illegal sale of arms throughout the world, and will soon surpass the illegal sale of drugs throughout the world. So an epidemic of those proportions you will find in every major metropolitan area, every community, neighborhood, suburb across the United States. It really is a problem, and it's something that Restoration House endeavors to make sure that the I guess what you could call the collateral damages in almost war terminology, that we're there to heal and restore the victims and to put them on their feet and to allow them to have hope for a better tomorrow and to be significant contributors to society. And so we really have a heart for this mission and a passion for this. But it unfortunately does exist within our community. Kansas City was ranked and continues to be ranked in the top five in the United States in both adult women and minor children human trafficking. There are 300,000 under 18 years old that are lured into human trafficking every year in the United States. There are 2 to 4 million adults nationwide that are lured into human trafficking annually. And 96% of those are women.
Oh, my goodness. I didn't realize it was like that. Why is it so prevalent now, or are we just hearing more about it?
I think society is becoming more educated. We are more comfortable having the conversation now. I think it's a difficult conversation to have. We are a hyper-sexualized society. Human trafficking has often been referred to as a victimless crime, mm-hmm. and that is simply not true. That is the greatest myth in the cause and in fighting the mission, that there are many victims and many collateral damages to societies, whether it be financial, whether it be drugs, guns, marriages, things like that. It can really destroy a community from the inside out.
Jeff, can you just describe for us what human trafficking is? Are there different forms? Just kind of explain what it is, please.
Sure. Really, there are two types of human trafficking. There's human labor trafficking, where men and women, children are forced into labor camps, sweatshops, factories. They are often kept in single locations, whether it be trailers, even automobiles, hotels, motels, houses, where they are houses, groups. They experience the same emotional, psychological, and physical abuses that those in human sex trafficking encounter. but they are simply exploited for their labor and for their work efforts. They are typically not paid. All of their food, clothing, and things like that are provided by their traffickers, and in such minimal ways that we would be appalled as a society to know that people live this way. And then there's the human sex trafficking, and it's really a business enterprise. They're very, very good at what they do. They've learned how to find their product, source their product, or even create their product. And what I mean by that is, and I don't mean to sound insensitive, right, but it's business to them, and their product is people. And so they've learned how to coerce people into relationships that seem healthy at first, and then those victims that are lured are made alcohol dependent. They are made drug addicted. They are emotionally and psychologically, again, abused. And they endure physical tortures that we can't even imagine. And they are made to earn a living for the trafficker by selling themselves. A human trafficker can make upwards of $200,000 per adult woman, and unfortunately, it's sickening, but even more for a child.
Okay, I know this. I sound like I don't know what I'm talking about. Who do they traffic these people to?
You know, that's a great question. A lot of times, we believe in the United States that the people that buy these children or buy these women must also be of the lower echelons of our society and culture, and uneducated and violent people and really disturbed people, but they're not. They are often well educated. They are often business people in the business world. A lot of it occurs in business travel, and then unfortunately, a lot of it occurs during major events, whether it be concerts or sporting events. There's always a lot of press and media given around Super Bowl time. It's one of the most highly trafficked days of the calendar year. But really, it is the customer is the typical suburban dweller that typically has a good job, that is in a marriage, that has children, and that's very unfortunate. So,
oh my goodness, I didn't realize that.
It's really an unfortunate thing, because we think it's the scourges mm-hmm. of our society, and it's not.
All right, what can people do, or what can they, what can they do to fix it?
You know, I think that in our society today, one of the things that I like to say that's analogous to this is we've become much more comfortable as a society talking about depression and sadness and the blues, and we're much more comfortable now in having those discussions around suicides. And as we see increased suicides in a youth population, I would say that it's analogous to that. We need to be just as comfortable having the discussions about our hypersexualized society. We need to have the discussions about the lures into sex trafficking that are used by the traffickers. They largely operate on computers, on internet, on cell phones, mobile devices. 76% to 80% of all transactions are initiated on a mobile device. We need to be cautious and educate our children. They're on Snapchat, they're on Kick, they're on Periscope, they're on Instagram, they're on Twitter, they're everywhere. And they actually, adult human traffickers actually will hire underage workers, boys, to lure young girls into relationships and into those opportunities where they can then be coerced and put into the sex industry. So we really need to become more comfortable as a society, and then we need to acknowledge that it is of epidemic proportions and is going to take epidemic proportion type resources to fight it.
Wow.
A lot of people believe that prevention and going after the Johns and going after the customers is the way to win this war, and I equate it to this.
Mm-hmm.
Wars are not won when the last bomb is dropped and the last structure is destroyed. Wars are won when you go and you rebuild the people. and you take care of them and you get them back on their feet and you give them better hope for tomorrow, so that you're not fighting the same war 5 years from now. And so I would tell people that this is multi-pronged and multifaceted, and we need to make sure that we're taking care of the victims, both adult women and minor children.
And you talk about women and children. How about men?
Men are a small proportion of those being human trafficked, and unfortunately, and we need to also raise awareness toward this. Boys and men that have been trafficked are much less likely to come forward. They're much less likely to seek help. They are stigmatized. Believe it or not, even worse sometimes. So they live longer as trafficked victims, and they rarely say anything later in life if they're able to escape or be liberated. But they still need healing as well and restoration. And you can imagine just the mental illness and some of the physical disabilities that they live with. And so we need to be cognizant of that as well, and that certainly is a need in the cause. Going forward,
we're talking to Jeff Arbuckle, the president of Restoration House, and they've been around 4 years. Obviously, technology has just made this crime just take off. I mean, it's so anonymous, and you can't, there's no trail. You know, it's just very difficult. I know recently you heard about, I believe it was Lenexa, where there was a stop, just a normal traffic stop, and the officer noted something kind of odd. The two adults were not related, and then they had a young girl in the vehicle, so they were able to rescue her.
Yes, and that's tremendous awareness of looking at who may be at risk, and we're doing a much better job. I'll tell you this, the local hospitals and healthcare systems in the Kansas City metropolitan area are doing a tremendous job. Forensic nurses, they're training their staffs. And everyone involved in the treatment of a trauma victim that presents to a hospital with a physical or medical condition of understanding, is this person being trafficked? How do we approach that? How do we ascertain that type of information? And then what do we do? And our medical professionals are doing a tremendous job, as is law enforcement. But we as a society need to do a better job as well. And we need to also talk to our children. Yeah. Just because they go to school with someone that goes to school with them and is in class every day does not mean they're not being trafficked and held against their will outside of school. It does happen. They're not always isolated, but it happens right within our high schools, within our middle schools, and certainly even at the university and college level. So we need to also educate youth on talking to their peer groups and identifying those risks and who are most likely at risk to be trafficked or in trafficking.
Jeff, is there a website where they can get more information?
You know, restorationhousekc.com is our website. But I will tell you that there are also other coalition organizations, even within our own community, that, again, fight this fight in one or more of the facets to put an end to this epidemic. And we have a lot of great partners out there. But check out restorationhousekc.com and then give us a call if anyone needs more information. And we're happy to have those conversations and direct
Perfect.
People to the resources that they need more information.
Perfect. And then next week, I'm going to have a story on Fox 4 on the morning show. So we'll be talking to one of your folks there. And thank you so very much, Jeff, for talking to us, and keep up the good fight.
Kathy, thank you so much. God bless.
We got more on the way. Stay with us.
Hang on. There's more on the way with Kathy Quinn and KC Forum.
All right, if you've just tuned in, we are going to talk about Charlie's House. We have Brett Horn with us. How are you, Brett?
I'm great, Kathy. How are you?
I'm doing very, very well, and I'm very excited to hear about Charlie's Ball. But you know what? I know what Charlie's House is. Why don't you give us a little history?
Well, Charlie's House is a nonprofit organization, a 501c3, and our mission is to prevent accidents and injuries to children in and around the home. We've been around for about 11 years. Unfortunately, it was started after a tragic accident in my own home, where my son Charlie, only 2.5 at the time, was killed when a dresser in his own room, the dresser was only 30 inches high, tipped over and took his life.
Oh, my. So from this, Charlie's House, you want to help other parents not go through what your family has gone through.
Absolutely. You know, the in-home accidents are the number one cause of hospitalization for children ages birth to 11 years old. It's not cancer. It's accidents. There are things that can be prevented. And, of course, as a parent who lost a child to an accident in the home, I just really want to encourage everyone to take the time to make sure that you go through your house and you do absolutely everything possible to ensure that it's the safest environment for your children.
So your mission statement is, or your mission, as you mentioned already partly, is to keep these kids safe. How do you do that? How does Charlie's House do that?
Well, we give out tons of hundreds of thousands of Charlie's checklists, little safety checklists for you to go around your home. We give out safety supplies to those who can't afford them. You can go to our website for that. www.charlieshouse.org. And we are speak at many, many events, community events throughout the year. And we are actually building the nation's first safety demonstration home on Hospital Hill. So that'll be a great community center where parents and caregivers can come and learn how to properly childproof their home.
And when is that going to start?
Well, we've broken ground, and hopefully it's going to warm up here soon so we can really get the wheels turning on it, but hopefully in the fall of 2019.
All right. And I was there with you. Was that about 8 months ago, 10 months ago we were there? We were talking about it?
It was, yes. Okay. Yeah. You know, the red tape you sometimes have to get done before you break ground, but we have officially broken ground, and we are on the way. We had decided initially right after the accident that if we could lend his story to help prevent this type of accident and any other in-home accidents, to help prevent those types of accidents from occurring, that we were happy to do so.
Is there anything that where people, like, for instance, you said that checklist, is there a website where they can go to learn about it? Do you ever send people out to people's houses, or is there anything like that, any sort of a service like that?
Well, absolutely. The Charlie's Checklist you can reference on our website, www.charlieshouse.org.
So the website is charlieshouse.org. All right. As you hear Paquita in the background, she's barking. It's time to go to break. We've got more on the way. Stay with us.
Hang on. There's more on the way with Kathy Quinn and KC Forum.
Midwest Plastering is a pool plastering company specializing in all varieties of pool finishes. Brothers William and Brandon Cheney service new construction pool companies, pool renovation companies, and private pool owners throughout Missouri, Kansas, Iowa, Nebraska, and Oklahoma. The Cheney Brothers' focus since 2009 has always been to deliver the highest quality plaster, tile, and coping installation services. Midwest Plastering is a pool plastering company specializing in all varieties of pool finishes. Give them a call, 918-728-1572, or look them up on Facebook, or better yet, ask for one of their satisfied customers. The Cheney Brothers Midwest Plastering. Their focus, customer satisfaction.
All right, so we thought we would bring on Chuck Casely from KCP&L to talk about electricity outages, how you check it out, how you call up, because of the forecast that we're having this weekend. You know, it's supposed to be snowing right now, and if it is in your part of the city, you're just kind of keeping your fingers crossed, hoping it won't get too bad so that we don't lose any power the way we have a couple of other times. So let's welcome Chuck Casely from KCP&L to the show. I tell you what I really appreciated when we interviewed you for Fox 4, when you talked about, you know, you don't enjoy yourself if you know so many folks out there are without power.
Yeah, you know, we were pretty excited to go to the football game that afternoon, but our CEO, Terry Bassam, and myself both decided if we had folks out of power. So we went to our emergency operations center and dove right into outage restoration, and we would catch you know, glimpses of the score being updated, and that brought a little bit of excitement, but mostly it was just trying to work to get customers back on.
All right, let's talk about the original snowstorm of a couple weeks ago. Okay, so talk about that storm, and why did it take so long? Explain, folks out there, to get the power restored.
You know, most of the time what happens, Kathy, is we get wind, and wind knocks down, you know, branches or makes lines come together and kind of slap and cause voltage fluctuations. And those kind of outages, you have, you can get a lot of customers restored by fixing one problem. So it's not uncommon to come up to an outage and see a tree down into lines, and you clear that tree, make some damage repairs, and then you can bring up 400 or 500 people. Because the snow blanketed just dozens and dozens of square miles of area, there were trees in our lines everywhere. Mm-hmm. Not to mention the fact that the lines themselves and just all the equipment had 6, 7, 8 inches of snow on it in some places, which freezes and then melts during the day and freezes again. And they cause a lot of outages and a lot of small outages. And so what the issue really is versus having maybe 1,000 places where there was damage, and that gets up 100,000 people, we had 5,000 or 6,000 different places where the system was damaged. And it just took a lot of work to get everybody back up.
Wow. All right. So compare this storm that knocked all that power out to any other storm in the history of KCP&L.
Well, this is the second worst winter storm we've had, and the third overall. From a, you know, the last storm that folks probably really remember as being a 4-day outage here was what we called the Twin Peaks storm in 2011, and we had about 250,000 customers out over a 48-hour period. This storm, within about 12 to 14 hours, we had right around 170,000 people out. So this ranks number 3 in terms of overall customers impacted in our company's history, but in terms of the number of individual outages, it's number 1.
Wow. And would you not have been able to restore the power with just your crews?
No, we'd still be working. So we, you know, when you and I talked earlier today, we had more than 14 different utilities, plus another half dozen electrical contractors that came in from 6 different states that surrounded us. And at peak, we had about 2,200 crews out in the field working to clear tree damage off the lines and repair damage to the electrical system.
And how does that work, Chuck? Do they say, hey, look, KCP&L, we'd like to come and help you? Or how do you all help each other?
Well, whenever there's a weather system coming in, generally what we do is we talk to utilities that are close to us but aren't supposed to be hit by the storm. Mm. So, for example, we've got weather coming in this weekend, and you know, Colorado, Kansas, Iowa, Missouri, Illinois, those are all states that are in the storm's path. But if you go a little south of us to Oklahoma or to Arkansas or to Texas, that they're not predicted to get any snow, they're not predicted to get any wind, and so we've already reached out to those utilities and asked them to keep their crews on standby. And if we get hit really hard, the second the storm comes in, we'll call them and say, can you please start sending crews this way? So it's one of the great things about this industry is we all like to assist each other. In fact, we call it mutual assistance. Mm-hmm. And so that's what's happened here is we put out a call and said we'd take as many crews as we can, spare no expense, get the crews here. But by the same token, when there's hurricanes, for example, in Florida and on the eastern seaboard, we typically send 200-400 crews out there to help those utilities recover.
My goodness. All right, we're talking about KCP&L, the power outages, the storms, and Chuck Casely's here giving us an insight to it. So explain, when the power goes out, you have to do it kind of systematically. You've got to have, you know, hospitals, police stations. Explain that.
Yep. So the first thing we do when the power goes out and there's a big outage like this, the first thing we do is we send out crews to assess the damage. And what they literally do, our system is smart enough that it can tell us in the command center where an outage has occurred. And so we'll send a crew to where that outage has occurred, and then they will literally drive or walk the line to assess what the damage is and what's caused it. They'll enter that into the computer, and then we will dispatch either a tree crew or a line crew or a construction crew, depending on what is needed. And you're right, Kathy. The first thing that we do is we get on critical infrastructure. What's critical infrastructure? Well, hospitals, critical infrastructure. Cell service, critical infrastructure. Mm-hmm. Making sure police stations, fire stations, the pumping stations for water, those come first. And then as we get that done, we start working the biggest outages that we can. So if you are in an outage that has 2,000 or 3,000 or 4,000 people impacted, we want to go there first because that's the biggest bang for your buck, right? That's how you get the mm-hmm. most people up the quickest.
All right. If you've got somebody at home who is, let's say, they're hooked up to oxygen or something, is that, do you know that ahead of time?
We do if they let us know. Okay. And so we, you know, some people don't know. We actually keep what we call a medical customers list. And they can go to our website, www.kcpl.com, and they can look up a form that they can email in, and that allows us to know that they are a customer with medical or some kind of a disability where they need electricity. And if they let us know that they have that need, then we try and prioritize those customers as well. And this last storm, we probably had 3 or 4 dozen folks who said, you know, they have equipment of some kind that they really need power to keep going. Mm-hmm. And to the extent we can, we try and get those people on as quickly as possible.
And, you know, it can be frustrating when your power is out. We've all had it, I'm sure. And so what you want folks to know is you are working as hard as you can, 24/7, be patient.
Absolutely. And they should know that, you know, our line crews, the people who staff our call centers, the folks who work on our emergency operations center, this outage was big enough that 1 out of every 4 or 5 of them were working while power was out at their house. So even the utility company employees, we're not immune to having outages. My mother-in-law stayed with us during the last power outage because she didn't have power. So we know it's frustrating. I mean, look, we rely on our cell phones to communicate, computers, TV. Some folks have, you know, there's obviously refrigeration. These are all things we need. But believe me when I tell you, we don't want folks out of power. We want to get them up as quickly as humanly possible. And we really appreciate folks who are patient and understand that, you know, this was, you know, depending on where you were, 8 to 12 inches of snow in about a 16-hour period. And it's a lot for the system and for the region to take.
Absolutely. Okay, so closing, where can they get a hold of you, or not you personally, but how can they let people know and find out, hey, listen, is there an outage in my area? What's the best way to contact KCP&L?
So you can call us 1-888-LIGHT-KC to either report an outage or to get in touch with a customer service representative. I will say at the beginning of a storm and through those first 48 hours, it's pretty difficult to get a human being because we only have about 150 people taking phone calls. And so those folks will get inundated with 10,000, 15,000, 20,000 calls. So there can be long wait times. It can be hard to get through. You can also just report it using your touch-tone phone, and we will know that you have an outage. Mm-hmm. You can go to our website and report it, and we have an outage map, and that outage map will show your neighborhood and if there is a outage. And as we get deeper into the storm and the restoration effort, it'll also start to say whether or not there has been a crew assigned to work your particular outage. So there's lots of ways for people to get information. They can also stay tuned to our social media on Facebook and Twitter.
All right. That was Chuck Caisley, KCP&L. Thank you so much. Thank you to all of our guests this weekend. Thank you. Thank you. And Katie Connors, executive producer. She makes it happen, as does Andrina Byrne, associate producer. You have Ed Walker getting us on the air. The elders allowing us to use their music and that voice. That is Doug Medlock. All right. I'm Kathy Quinn. Until next weekend, see ya.
It's KC Forum with Kathy Quinn.